This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. It's Friday afternoon, so it's our Doctor in the House show. And as always, we have consultant neurologist Dr. George Lee. Today, he's joining us via Zoom. He's not allowed in the studio during this rotation. How are you today, George?
I'm very good. Feel a bit infectious when you say that I'm not allowed to go.
Not at all. We're keeping you safe, George. And today we also have joining us Dr. Faisal Izwan Mustafa, Deputy Director of the Non-Communicable Disease Section, Disease Control Division of the Ministry of Health. How are you today, Dr. Faisal?
I'm good. Thank you. Always a mouthful, yeah, my designation.
Not at all. I think the more titles you have, the more important you are, right?
doesn't sound right at all. I think I'm compensating.
But it's a privilege to have you with us because today we're talking about cancer. We're talking about getting the real numbers, the actual data on cancer. So back in April 2020, Health Director General Dr. Noor Hisham Abdullah instructed that all cancer cases diagnosed in both public and private health facilities are now required to be reported to the Ministry of Health. So we want to take a look at how our national data on cancer has been collected and what this development means in terms of improving cancer care, as well as allocations perhaps for research, treatment and screening. So if you have any questions, do call us 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Faisal, can we start with getting a sort of baseline understanding of where we are today with cancer? The most recent National Cancer Registry report we have is for the period 2012 to 2016. Can you highlight some of the key findings of the report there?
Thanks, shall we? So with regards to the report that you have just mentioned, perhaps I would like to highlight three key things. Firstly, what is our lifetime risk of developing cancer? So for Malaysian males, is 1 in 10. That's our lifetime risk. And for Malaysian females, is 1 in 9, slightly higher among females. We talk about the top three cancers in terms of incidence. For women, the first is breast, followed by colorectal, and thirdly, cervical cancer. And for men, the first is colorectal, second is lung, and third is prostate cancer. So that's the second point. The third point that I'd like to highlight is the early detection and prompt treatment improves the chances of cure. Unfortunately, delays in presentation is commonly found among our cancer patients in Malaysia. And the same report estimated that about 60%, cancers in Malaysia are detected late. That means they are either stage 3 and stage 4 out of the four stages of cancer. Stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, stage 4. So late will be stage 3 and stage 4. So I'll stop there first. Sure.
All right. Also, one of the findings that keeps getting reported in the media from this registry report is that there was an overall 11% increase of new cancer cases. What does that actually mean? When you link it to lifetime risk, perhaps?
I think we have to firstly need to talk about non-communicable diseases as the biggest burden in terms of our health. As we become more developed, right now, it is estimated that about 3 out of 4 deaths in Malaysia are due to NCDs, non-communicable diseases. The first is still cardiovascular diseases, followed by cancer. So we are following the trajectory of developed nations. You know, as you become more developed, you're more likely to die from non-communicable diseases. And in some countries, cancer has overtaken cardiovascular diseases. So you would expect. Another reason why you would expect cancer to go up is because, firstly, we are living longer. And one of the main risk factors for cancer is actually age. As you grow older, you're more likely to get cancer. So you are expecting cancer to increase in terms of incidences. However, that's why I felt it was important to highlight point number three about the importance of prevention in the first place, screening and early detection and good treatment, because then you can intervene and improve outcomes.
Right, so I'm really intrigued by what you said on the statistics, like one in 10 of us probably will face the morbidity or mortality of cancer, and one in 9 in women. Can we compare such data with our neighboring nations, and you know, how do we fare when it comes to that?
All right. So the same report also contains comparison with our neighboring countries. In terms of our data, so this question goes back to the quality of our registry. If you look at the, I can't remember which page, of course, offhand. But if you look at the overall incidences of all types of cancer, our incidence is quite low compared to many countries. And our experts feel that this is not really representative of the actual situation. And one of the contributing factors is perhaps underreporting. And that will, you know, we can discuss that back later, because Xiao A mentioned the reason they're talking about is on the registry. Yes, Xiao. Right.
Yeah. Do you want to elaborate a little bit of how data is collected in Malaysia?
All right. So let's talk about surveillance, right? I don't want to talk about just the registry. Because when you talk about cancer itself, you have to talk about the continuum of care. So from prevention, early detection, screening, management, palliative care, and rehabilitation. So when you just talk about the registry itself, it talks about just the diagnosis of the cancer and the treatment modality and, well, treatment outcomes, really. So it is important data, but it's not the only data. And whenever you see, perhaps an easy example is to take one cancer, perhaps. Let's talk about cervical cancer. Because right now we have an effective prevention, which is the HPV vaccination, mm-hmm. right? So, and which we are running right now in Malaysia as a school-based program. And we've been quite successful in terms of HPV vaccination coverage. Over 83% in terms of the eligible females in the age group. So you need to monitor that bit of the prevention, mm-hmm. and we need good data to show how many of females are being diagnosed and what stage they are being diagnosed, because you will see a lag time from HPV vaccination in the 15-year-old age group, whereas your risk for cervical cancer increases as you grow older, right? 40, 50, that kind of age group. So you're talking about what 15, 25, 20 years lead time. So while we maintain and we monitor HPV vaccination rates, it is important to have good data on the actual cervical cancer in terms of incidences, in terms of the staging, in terms of outcomes, survivability, so that you then can actually see how effective you've been or if there are any other developments. Because it's not just the matter of technology here, George. There is a behavioral component. So, for example, I know slightly off topic, we talk about screening. So, let's take another example, breast cancer screening. You know, you can do breast self-examination, mm-hmm. and you can do mammograms. Mm-hmm. However, NHMS 2019 has shown that a huge proportion of women of the eligible age never had a mammogram done before. The figure, if I'm not mistaken, for breast cancer screening, 3 in 4 women aged 40 years and above never had a mammogram, despite the accessibility and availability. So I know I'm jumping from cancer to cancer. I do apologize, but I'd just like to illustrate certain key things. So you have the technology, you have the availability of services, accessibility. Mammogram is accessibility. There's no accessibility issue for a lot of women in Malaysia, but yet 3 in 4 women in 2019 have never had a mammogram. So you can understand that we're not detecting them early, mm-hmm. And then they'll present late. Of course, late presentation is multifactorial. We can talk about that later. I'll stop there first.
Okay, so if we're talking about this surveillance of the available data that runs the whole gamut, right? Like you said, it's a continuum of care. Then why do we always in the last two cycles of the registry reports, we've sort of used that data then as the estimate or as what we know of national cancer prevalence. Is that then perhaps not representative?
I would not say not representative. One thing that is important is to monitor trends. That's one. Comparing with other countries is another comparison, which is very important. So that is why one of the things I said earlier, we feel we are underreporting because we are comparing ourselves with other countries. You know, it can't be that low. I mean, it can be low when we know, when we talk to clinicians. Surveillance system is not. You have to compare it with what the experts feel and what are the other countries. So if you talk about, let's just talk about the registry itself. It is important for us to have good data, certainly, not just for planning, to monitor for implementation, the processes, and also to look at outcomes, monitoring and evaluation, definitely. And we need good data for that. But by itself, it is just one component of a good response. Because when you talk about cancer care, you cannot run away talking about good prevention and good control. If you look at the overall plan or strategies as advocated by the WHO, you will see these three main pillars of a good prevention and control. First pillar is the prevention bit, second pillar is the control bit, and the third pillar is always a good monitoring and evaluation, a good surveillance system. So what we're focusing now is, of course, the surveillance, as it were, or the evaluation. However, we talk about cancer in Malaysia, we need to talk about all three. You can't strengthen one and expect the prevention and control to improve. It is interlinked. For prevention, for example, we have good data from NHMS, and I've just quoted you some data that we collect through NHMS in terms of behavioral and in terms of risk factors as well, right? So the other risk factors that we know for cancer is smoking, obviously, obesity. So these are like two of the, you know, there's a lot of cancers relating to being overweight and obese. Bad nutrition and overweight and obese is the proxy measure of not being active and also not eating well. There are many cancers associated with that. And with the NHMS 2019 data really not showing much improvement, smoking has decreased slightly, but obesity is going up, diabetes.
It's going up.
We can reserve that for, we can discuss that on a separate session. So that doesn't augur well. And then I've described to you about health-seeking behavior, as it were, of Malaysians, or not health-seeking, not correctly seeking, if that's the term for that. And then the other issue about availability and accessibility to good quality treatment once you are diagnosed. So I know I'm making it a bit complicated. There are many aspects there. But I would say, going back to your question, good data is important, but we need also to talk about all the other components for cancer care.
Mm. And I guess it's because the registry report is something, one of the publicly available forms of data that's reported, something that other stakeholders in healthcare can look to in order to see how they can sort of act within this field. But let's hang on to that thought Because if you say that there's potential or possible underreporting, then how does that impact on the kind of planning implementation that you say it's, this data is crucial for? Today is our Doctor in House segment. We are talking about getting the real numbers on cancer in Malaysia with consultant urologist Dr. George Lee, as well as Dr. Faisal Izwan Mustafa, Deputy Director from the Non-Communicable Disease Section of the Disease Control Division, Ministry of Health. If you have any questions, call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Welcome back to the show. It's our Health and Living show today. And today's Friday, so it's Doctor in the House. And on the line with me is consultant urologist Dr. George Lee, and also Dr. Faisal Izwan Mustafa, Deputy Director of Non-Communicable Disease Section from the Disease Control Division, Ministry of Health. We are talking about cancer today, getting the real numbers on cancer, because one of the publicly available forms of data that we can access is the National Cancer Registry report, which we've had two cycles of, and the most recent one being the 2012 to 2016 report, which was released earlier this year. And the reason we want to talk about the registry and other forms of data collection is because in April 2020, our Health Director General said that all cancer cases that are diagnosed in public and private hospitals should now be reported to the Ministry of Health. So we want to look at how that could potentially improve data collection, and then what's the impact of that? What's the benefit to patients at the end of the day? Call us if you have any questions, 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Actually, before we go into, you know, numbers and policies and all these kinds of things, there's a pretty pertinent question here on WhatsApp from Walter, who wants to know, you know, there are so many different cancers out there. Is there a one-size-fits-all screening to test annually? Not likely. But if not, what kinds of tests would be recommended? And what are the most common cancers should we be screening for?
Oh, okay. So in terms of recommendations, we are very much guided by recommendations from the World Health Organization. And one of the key factors that we look at is the cost effectiveness. And there are other criteria, as it were, about what makes a good screening. So one of the key things, for example, for cancer is that it is a cancer that can be detected early, because there are several cancers you can't detect early, right? Secondly, if you can detect these cancers early, that means early intervention will improve outcomes. Because again, not all cancers are the same. I think that's one of the key issues about cancer, if I just backtrack a bit. Cancer is not one disease. Even a breast cancer is not one disease. It is many diseases. Even when you use the word breast cancer, and as we become more advanced in our scientific knowledge, we are, you know, further defining this as separate entities. So going back about the screening itself, so Okay, firstly, there isn't any real population-based screening programs in Malaysia. Population-based screening programs, I mean, we reach out to the population to screen them. We are more like opportunistic, as it were. So the main cancers that we are doing opportunistic screening are the breast cancer, the cervical cancer, the colorectal cancer, which we have embarked right now, and also for oral cancers. So these are the, and there are already strong scientific evidence supporting the opportunistic, even population-based screening for these four cancers. In Malaysia, looking at our current cost-effectiveness data, we also conduct high-risk screening. That means we only screen high-risk individuals with known risk factors for certain types of cancer, which will include liver cancer, prostate, and also lung. So these are an NPC, nasopharyngeal cancer. So these are what we call as high risk screening. Just to preempt any other questions with regards to modalities of screening, I do know there are a lot of screening modalities being offered, particularly cancer markers, blood tests. Mm-hmm. All right. The problem with a lot of cancer markers, there isn't any strong cost-effectiveness evidence, and there is also the issue on sensitivity and specificity of this test. That means either false negative, which is bad for you, and false positive, which is also bad, because a false positive means that we think you have cancer, but actually you don't. Mm-hmm. And then you start searching for it, and some of these other screening or further confirmatory tests or investigation can be quite invasive. And, you have unfortunate, other consequences of doing these tests.
And a lot of anxiety
as well.
So even
false positive can also... thank you, Sherry. And it's not good, basically, false positive and false negative. So we do have a specific criteria for screening.
So, George, do you want to weigh in on prostate cancer screening? Because the blood markers are very commonly cited in that as well.
Yeah, well, everyone always says that, PSA, which is the tumor marker, stands for persistent stress and anxiety. And then in many ways, it is. Whenever something is not accurate, and then, but this is the best that we have. However, looking at the beginning of the show, we highlighted that prostate cancer is the third commonest cancer in men. And as we are getting older, we're living longer, and then the chances of prostate cancer obviously is there. No, so therefore, the listener who texted in have a valid point. On one hand, we don't really want to do mass screening, which is unnecessary, not cost-effective. When we do opportunistic screening to strategically plan to target colorectal cancer and also prostate cancer, is that a viable option? And then, this is a very difficult debate that goes on in the medical community. What do you reckon, Faisal?
Well, you took the easy way out, right? You said a debate. Yes. It is. It's sometimes not easy for Joe. I'm not being condescending. It is not sometimes easy to explain to the lay person. One hand, as you have pointed out, it is a common cancer, and on the other hand, why we are not running it as a mass screening. However, let's talk about colorectal cancer screening. We have only started it the last few years, and in terms of coverage, we have published a paper. It's not gone out yet, but it has been accepted for publication. We are only screening less than 1%, okay, just 1% of eligible population in Malaysia right now for colorectal cancer screening. Colorectal cancer screening is slightly different because while you can detect the fecal occult blood, that means, blood being present in your stool, but there is a next level of screening, having to do a colonoscopy, a scope, bring up your backside. And that is a bit more complex to do. You can't just refer a patient to another clinic to do it. It's usually a specialized unit to do the screening. So despite that, we did an evaluation of the earlier colorectal cancer screening. So even have... asking and the IFOBT kit, the initial screening for fecal occult blood, that means trying to detect blood in your stool, is quite cheap and relatively easy to do. A lot of Malaysians are very reluctant to submit stool samples, that's one, or even to self-test at home, and you can send in your results to the clinic. You can self-sample at home, and then you can send the kit to the clinic for testing. And I think that's why the reason why I brought up the issue on behavior of Malaysians. The technology is there. The technology, if you use common sense, should... assist people or should increase screening rates, but we were already aware that even when we upscale our colorectal cancer screening, we will need to actively, proactively manage people's acceptance, as it were. I would use the word acceptance to undergo the initial screening for cancer in the first place.
Mm. Data is one of the things that you rely on to know whether you should do population-based screening and whether the results or the outcomes of that would be worthwhile the investment, right? But if data from, say, for instance, the cancer registry report, if there is potential for underreporting, and also if it is being released so many years after the collection period, is it valid?
And why is that? Why are we having a lag time of at least 4 years of the result, the outcome of the collection, the data?
So we're looking at the collection of the data was from 2012 to 2016, and it was publicly released earlier this year, that's in 2020.
I'm always happy to be on BFM because you always ask me the easy questions,
of
right?
Of course.
Yes. I'm getting messages that my line is unstable. Are you still hearing me?
Yes,
clearly?
We are. Did you get the question?
Right, okay. Yeah, yes, I did.
Oh, very easy question?
Yeah, all the easy questions. Yes. Firstly, general principles. I think as an organization, MOH is still not sharing a lot of data which could be shared as compared to many other more developed countries. So I talk about general principles. And secondly, so not only are we reluctant to put even it can be anonymized, right? In the public domain, that can be easily accessed not just by public, but by researchers as well, so that they can do research on it. Secondly, the timeliness of having making this data available. All right. The first one, I can't comment much just because, you know, a lot of things in Malaysia is like that lah. Semua orang takut nak share. Kenapa takut tak share? I pun tak tahu kenapa. I mean, I'm more than happy to share data. I think the more people can work on our data, the merrier it becomes. But secondly, in terms of timeliness, this is a bit more difficult to respond to. One of the key things about being able to collect data timely is having a good system. And one of the things when I talk about system is an electronic medical record, having things already in electronic format, not just digitizing it, which is slightly different. You know, previously you submit paper, now you do Excel and you compile Excel. For me, that's not a system. You're just digitizing the processes. It is still manual. And a lot of times it is manual. However, just going back to with regards to this current circular that was came out by the Director General. So the submission of data is now online by both the public and private healthcare practitioners. And the online notification is through the what we call the Sistem Maklumat Rekod Pesakit, SMRP, or in English is Patient Care Information System. It's not really an EMR, but just collects specified data set for patients. And that fits under the My Health Data Warehouse, the MyHDW, which is an initiative by the MOH to start the ball rolling in having a data warehouse. So while you may have the data warehouse, you know, data is only as good as being put in it. And when a lot of processes of putting it in is very much manual, and who enters the data is the healthcare personnel as well, you know, the healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. And if you ask me in, you know, resource constraint settings, what would I rather have my healthcare worker do? Is it manage the patient well or enter data? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, that's a no-brainer. So there is a compromise in terms of the speed we can enter the data. The other thing which I think we need to emphasize, and this is my message to my fellow doctors and, you know, medical practitioners out there, is sometimes we need to really understand why we do certain things. I remember as a houseman, you know, one of the things I hated the most, just about as I was about to leave the ward, the sister will come, doctor, they need isi borang discharge. You know, mm-hmm. The patient is being discharged. There is this form that you need to fill up that goes to the record office. And I would just put anything and everything, you know, whatever, you know, just ask the this is the data on the reason that patient came into the hospital. And now where I am right now, I now know how valuable that data is for my planning. Mm-hmm. And when I get data, you know, cause of death, what's the favorite cause of death? Septicemia, you know, that's the easiest, you know, out when you're not sure. That doesn't really help in terms of planning because, you know, septicemia is due to what? It's actually due to diabetes or, you know, uncontrolled diabetes kind of thing. So data itself, knowing why, I think raising awareness among healthcare, you know, practitioners about the importance of the work that they do in submitting data. It is a responsibility. It's slightly different from dengue, for example, when you need the data for immediate action. And of course, for dengue, for example, there is an act that, you know, if you know, like Josh, didn't notify, we can fine him, compound him. But because there is an act and you need the data for immediate action for control. Whereas for cancer, perhaps of the lag time, it's like our patients lah, with diabetes, you know, it's 15 years, 20 years down the line kind of impact. So perhaps you don't care. Sorry, I'm digressing. Yeah, I should stop now.
I think what I'm taking away from this is you need to threaten to throw doctors in prison if they don't report. But I guess what I want to find out after we come back from the next break is then how this recent circular from the DG where you now have to notify cancer cases online, how's that going to improve them? Because when we introduce something, hopefully it results in better outcomes. And what does that mean for health practitioners like George, for instance? How much is that going to add to his workload? So call us if you have any questions. 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. I'm speaking to Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, and Dr. Faisal Izzuan Mustafa, deputy director of the non-communicable disease section, disease control division, Ministry of Health. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. On the line with me today, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, joining me for the Doctor in the House show, as well as Dr. Faisal Izzuan Mustafa, deputy director from the non-communicable disease section of the disease control division, Ministry of Health. We're talking about getting the real numbers on cancer today. We've discussed how the National Cancer Registry report works. We've discussed the key findings from it, and some of the main things are, I think really the main thing that strikes home for me is that 60% of cancers in Malaysia at that point was found to be diagnosed in the late stages of 3 and 4. So really it's a wake-up call for us to heed early detection, early testing, early screening, and many of which is available and accessible to us. But before the break, we were talking about the limitations, I suppose, of the National Cancer Registry in terms of just the human cost or the human labor required in putting in the data. And, you know, that's why there is this time lag between the data being sort of the study period, so the survey period ending, and the data finally being presented and publicly released. So, in April 2020, in April of this year, the Health Director General, Dato' Dr. Noor Hisham, instructed that all cancer cases from public and private centres will now be reported to the Ministry of Health through an online system. Dr. Faisal, how is this going to realistically improve our real-time data collection? It's still the same amount of work that doctors will have to do to put the data in.
I suppose the short answer to that is that we need people to take more and more responsibility. As you rightly pointed out, it is quite human resource intensive. If it is being reported, then we don't need our people, as in MOH, to do active case detection, you know, having to go down to the labs, having to go down to hospitals to actively seek out cases that have not been reported. And that is very labor intensive. We hope, and this is just a starting point in terms of advocating, as it were. So we are really targeting the people who work with cancer in terms of, you know, the clinicians that diagnose them, the labs that do the testing, because the notification also can come from the lab itself, both private and public labs. the pathology labs, through an online system, and now through a database, it is easy to reconcile multiple, multiple notifications, which is much easier with an online system, rather than having to manually sort it out later on. So the system is in place. However, talking about, I mentioned about electronic medical record. I think this is one thing that we as a nation need to think about in terms of moving forward because data is really important. And the cancer registry is just one part of the whole data set that is required to monitor the whole continuum of prevention and control of any disease.
George, what do you think? It's physicians like you who has to bear then that responsibility. I mean, even before this, the registry was based on voluntary notification. So did you report?
Yeah, well, this is a trouble, you see, because when it's voluntary, many people will choose not to. And then therefore, underreporting is one of the issues. And the second problem is that when the system is complicated, certain things that is subjected to interpretation. For example, whenever something is it stage 3, stage 2, that sort of when there's a grey line, it will become an issue. The third thing that is problematic is that I think because in a Malaysian system, primary healthcare, it's not the pivot, it's not the backbone of the healthcare system. So when we have a system where patients can go doctor shopping, and then so they may see multiple physicians, and then we may have multiple reporting of the patients, because if it's anonymous, let's say one patient who has a certain cancer has seen multiple physicians and then get it reported on multiple bases, and then that is problematic. So I think in US and also UK, it's slightly different, because in US, everything is reimbursable. So therefore, when its reimbursement comes in, you don't fill in, you don't get paid. And so that is a system in order to, in a way, entice and then make the doctors fill in the forms. And the UK system is that the GP is the pivot to actually provide that continuity of care. And then when GP system that they can detect the diagnosis, the treatment strategy, the journey of the patient, and also the wider picture of how that influence the family, the environmental influence of it, I think that system will make it more robust and more meaningful. So answering your question, yes, I am filling in the forms, and whenever it comes to when it's presented to me.
Well done, George.
And just like Hazel, all those years ago, the disgruntled houseman who do it unwillingly. I guess it's paksarela lah.
Speaking of paksarela, one way is to incentivize, like you said, reimbursement, but that's not the model that we have here. But then what about penalizing, right? And Dr. Faisal, you already mentioned with dengue, there's an act. If you don't report it, there are legal ramifications. Are we ready to make a notification for cancer mandatory here? That it sounds like there's a lot of issues that we need to fix first.
Yes, I just like to follow up with what George mentioned earlier. He talked about healthcare system. I have very strong opinion about why we need to transform the healthcare system in Malaysia when it comes to improving prevention as well as control of non-communicable diseases and cancer. And when you talk about the transformation of the healthcare system, you need to talk about the way of how we are financing our healthcare system, healthcare financing itself. This is a topic that BFM has covered before. That is the overall ecosystem. So, yes, for example, if we work really hard, I'm sure we can come up with an act that compels people to make compulsory notification, like some developed countries, which have a specific act that compels healthcare workers to submit data to registries. But it is just, like I said, it is just one part of this of the whole system. And you have a good healthcare system, certain ways, the way the system works, will incentivize or, you know, or will make people having to submit the data. So, for example, in the UK, where you have a capitated system, that means you are rewarded based on your performance, and the performance is being monitored through a system. You will try to do more preventive activities. You will try to, because your it is your outcome that is being measured, right? Not your processes, not the number of tests that you do, not the number of patients that you see. It is the outcome that is being measured. Then, in a way, that will incentivize you to do certain things. So our healthcare system doesn't incentivize us to do the things that Josh mentioned just now, which I completely agree with. So while we can make it compulsory, yes, is it worth it in a resource constraint setting? We can debate about that. Mm-hmm. So we could. But you know, coming up with an act, that's politics now. Talk about politics. Yeah, well, it's interesting. Interesting topic. But yeah, public health is also related to politics, unfortunately. Yeah.
I mean, compulsion is, I guess, only one way, one of many ways in public health. Just look at COVID-19. Compulsion is what kept people at home and enforced physical distancing. And now compulsion is needed to enforce mask wearing. And if we look at, there are countries that legislate cancer notification. Singapore, some states in Australia, New Zealand, that's just a few examples. So I know you've said pros and cons, but ultimately, should we be looking at that as a way to improve? It's got to matter to patients at the end of the day. It's got to make a difference for them.
Well, I've appeared before in BFM, and I've spoken quite a lot of things about regulatory interventions when it comes to changing behaviours. Mm-hmm. And I'm now using COVID-19 as a repeated example that Malaysians tak dengar cakap. Mm-hmm. Right, it doesn't matter what socioeconomic class you are, you don't really care, and we have to make you do it, mm-hmm. which is quite sad, really. It's a sad state of fact. But it's not just us Malaysians, right? I mean, other countries as well. It's been not easy, and just shows you about behavior. But despite that, I was just thinking about registries. So one good registry we have in Malaysia is the National Renal Registry, right? Mm-hmm. And you have a group of motivated people who work in, you know, nephrologists work with patients with chronic kidney diseases, and this is maintained, you know, started outside of MOH by a group of clinicians under their renal society, and that has persisted until now. So if somebody asks me, show me a good registry, I would point them out to the National Renal Registry, and there's nothing compulsion there, just a group of people who are very passionate, and the data that they collect in terms of the number of patients on dialysis, you know, private, public, this data is used completely for, you know, policy-making purposes, for implementation. So this is an example where, despite not being compulsory, you know, despite not even driven by MOH as an organization, or I mean, you know what I mean? There are nephrologists working with MOH who are driving this, mm-hmm. But they're not really, you know, by, you know, like, yeah, the boss, mm-hmm. again, not like DC Suruh lah. They're doing it. So yeah, this is one example where it is doable. But they will share with you, it is not an easy journey for them even. It did take them several years. However, they have managed to inculcate that culture of, you know, understanding why this data is important even among their junior specialists, and that culture just follow through over the years, mm-hmm. and they have produced their records very timely, and they are improving their timeliness of their registry reports. So so we do have some good user case that we can
share. So what I'm wondering is, will this online notification system for cancer now, could we be seeing annual reporting?
I wish I can say yes, mm-hmm. but I think then we need to see when the next report comes out. Then perhaps then you can interview me. Also, do you remember on 24th July? I would like a more timely report. NHMS, so in the National Health and Mobility Survey, that is becoming more timely now, mm-hmm. as compared to years ago when I first started being involved with NHMS, you know, you can see a lag year of lag time of even 2 years, 3 years before a report is being published.
Yeah.
One key thing that have facilitated that is the use of IT and the way we collect the data. So now they are collecting the data in a more timely and electronic manner. So yeah, I am positive, but how early, you know, how much gap we are closing, I can't really answer you. But certainly I will push, me personally, in my position, I will push for more timely data.
I just want to find out, you know, how has the COVID-19 pandemic forced us to rethink our national approach to cancer care, or to perhaps reframe our priorities? What's ahead for us, especially considering the National Strategic Plan for Cancer Control? The cycle ends this year. So what are the priorities ahead?
Talking about the pandemic itself, we're a bit late in collecting our own data, but it is something which is we're doing right now to see what's the real impact in terms of immediate impact and intermediate impact of the disruption of care. Certainly, not just for cancer, but for all the other chronic diseases. I would say COVID-19 has taken priority away from everything except COVID-19. But I think there are several key lessons that we could take. You know, it is possible to have a whole of society, whole of government approach towards a common cause. You know, prevention of COVID-19 is not MOH. It is by all the other agencies, the police, immigration, you know, all the other agencies. And actually for non-communicable diseases, even cancer, the prevention is outside of the MOH, outside of the health sector. So it is possible to have a whole of government and whole of society. And you know, the other thing that we could see from COVID-19, if there is imminent danger, we can take fast action. We can.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and you know, you see a very loud COVID-19 epidemic. Whereas for NCD, we always say what, silent epidemic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Epidemic yang senyap. So perhaps one thing that we need to think about is how we can make, I've often said this several times already, to make the NCD or cancer epidemic more loud as COVID-19. With regards to the National Strategic Plan for the Cancer Control Program, the main key points still go through the whole continuum of care from prevention, early detection, treatment, rehabilitation, palliative care, also including the component of research, the monitoring evaluation where the registry sits, and also the component of traditional medicine as well. Because that's something that feature quite strongly in Malaysia. So we acknowledge that. And we like to see that approach to be more evidence-based, as it were. However, from what my priorities are in terms of the public health, it is still addressing the common risk factors for non-communicable diseases, which is a continuing challenge. And also to see how we can improve patient navigation. I think Josh mentioned something about the patient's journey earlier on. I like to use the word patient navigation because the patient not just need medical but also social support. And there are already many social support out there, but they are not systematically available, or you know, a lot of people don't know what they don't know, what's available. So it is important for us to work on the patient navigation so that whatever resources that we have right now working within the limitations of our current healthcare system, we are able to assist our patients who are already diagnosed as best as we can to address both their social and their medical and health needs.
All right. So we're running out of time, but Dr. Faisal, could I get you to leave us with a message on prevention? I think, and that relates to a question that we have on WhatsApp from Stephen Koh as well. I think the only thing, the most important thing we really should focus on is cancer prevention.
Ooh. What should I say? So for screening. All right. So I think Malaysians need to be more knowledgeable about knowing what are the early signs and symptoms of cancer and seek treatment or seek consultation early when you develop the symptoms. That's one. And secondly, please undergo cancer screening when you are eligible. So I think that would be my two key messages, knowing the early signs and symptoms of cancer and go for screening.
George, do you have a final message?
Oh, mine is even better, right? Okay, you just have to live healthy. If what he said, if Faisal said to you earlier on that 1 in 10 of the men and 1 in 9 of the women, and in all 60% of us going to present in late stages, if that doesn't scare you, you really should be worried. So be healthy, live healthily, and then that's the only way to prevent.
All right. Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, and Dr. Faisal Iswan Mustafa, deputy director from the non-communicable disease section of Disease Control Division, Ministry of Health. This has been Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.